FM A
I
FM
E M
U メインメニュ
ー、メインメニュ
ー、メインメニュ
ー、メインメニュー、
メインメニュ
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Main Menu Live this week. That's right, we're live for the next 2 hours here on ACB Radio Mainstream. And tonight on Main Menu Live, we're first going to hear a presentation from President of ACB and President of Bay Area Digital, Chris Gray, all about a new talking glucometer that's currently under development. Marlena Lieberg had an opportunity to interview Chris Gray at the CSUN 2007 annual convention. After this short presentation, we will then bring Chris Gray on live, giving all of you an opportunity to call in and ask Chris any questions that you may have all about this new talking glucometer, which is currently under development. In the second hour, we'll be bringing on Karen McCall. Karen McCall is an expert in tablet PCs as well as PDF accessibility and has worked with Microsoft on Office 2007. She was actually part of the beta program for Microsoft, and we bring her on Main Menu Live to talk to us all about Office 2007. We've talked a little bit about this when we reviewed the most recent versions of screen readers for Vista, but we bring a user on who's very familiar with the product, and she'll tell us more about it. Plus, you'll be able to call in and ask her questions as well. Would you like to download Main Menu Live in the future as a podcast feed? We would love for you to do that. You can do that by subscribing to the feeds, which are located at www.acbradio.org/podcasts. There are two podcast feeds there for Main Menu. One is www.acbradio.org/podcasts/main menu, and the other is www.acbradio.org/podcasts/main menu live. The Main Menu Friends group is strong and growing, and we would love for you to participate. It's a group of people who love to talk about the technologies and topics that we discuss here on Main Menu. You can join that group by sending an email to main-menu-subscribe@googlegroups.com. That's main-menu-subscribe@googlegroups.com.
This is Marlena Lieberg, and we are being joined by several people in the room here. To my left is Chris Gray. Chris, welcome.
Thank you.
And behind me to my right is Jeff Bishop.
Hello.
A familiar voice. And Marvelena Quesada, further over to my right.
Hello.
And Gary Lieberg by the door.
Hello.
And what we are doing now is having a look at, is this beta or alpha or not even?
Well, the software is certainly beta, but because we're looking at, you know, a meter hooked up to a computer, I'd say we're probably overall at the alpha level of product development for this meter right now.
And this follows on very closely with the program you and I did on the 5th of February, where
exactly.
You talked with us for an hour about some of the interests and projects of Bay Area Digital.
That's right.
All right. Why don't you describe what you've got there, Chris,
okay.
And then we'll let you take the show away.
I've got a Freestyle Freedom meter here, just the standard print meter. You could go down and buy it at the store. Everybody uses. And as you can see, Marlena, you can hold it in your hand.
It's very tiny.
Very small.
Yes.
You can put it in your shirt pocket or your purse very easily. And at one end of this meter is where you put in the script. At the other end is a data port that you can use to get data out of the meter and put data into the meter. And what we have done in conjunction with the Abbott Diabetes Care and Abbott Laboratories is create a fully accessible version of this meter when you attach it to a PC. So it's step one. It's a proof of concept. And it says, yes, we can make this meter talk based on the software in it right now. We can look at logs. We can change all the options. We can read a blood reading, your glucose level in your blood, and everything works really quite beautifully, as I'll show you in just a moment.
All right. So describe to us what you're doing now.
Okay. I'm going to enter a command on the computer, and you'll begin to... You'll hear the screen reader talking until the program takes over to make the meter accessible.
All right.
And then you'll hear a different kind of voice talking on behalf of the meter.
So you're starting the program.
Mm-hmm. No meter was found. Please connect a meter to the COM1 serial port.
So what you're hearing there, for those of you who are savvy about these things, this is NeoSpeech talking. But NeoSpeech is, you know, the best speech on the market, no doubt about it.
No meter was found.
And
please connect a meter to the COM1 serial.
Now, can we have Kate if we want Kate?
You could.
Oh, okay,
yes,
good.
You could.
Want to make sure women have their equal access.
They certainly do.
All right.
And you can have whatever you want.
All right.
From NeoSpeech. Just set that as your default speech in the control panel speech settings, and you'll be fine. So it knows no meter's there. I'm going to plug the meter in now to the connector. And I show this in this way because I want people to know that this is going to be robust, very good software. And it can, if the meter isn't there, it knows it, it tells you. If
the meter is ready for use.
Okay, so the meter is ready for use. Let's see what the meter can do.
Hey, to hear or change alarm settings, press A. To hear or change optional meter settings, press O. To hear a log of available meter readings, press L. To hear a specific log reading, press R. To stop using the meter, press X. Ready.
Now there's one item we forgot to put in the help for this particular prototype software, and that is the query, which I'll do now by pressing Q.
Your meter is ready for use. Status information is as follows. The date is March 21st, 2007. The time is 19:38:32. The current calibration is 17. The current number of entries in the glucose reading log is 13. The number of control entries is 0. The number of reading errors is 8.
So, you can see that the meter can give you quite a lot of varied information about its own status, about the readings that have been taken, about what is going on overall in the meter. I'm going to take a vial of test strips.
And I'm going to move to your other side to be closer to the actual sound of the meter, of the computer.
While you're doing that, Chris,
yeah.
Sometimes some meters will give you a specific understanding of what your number reading is. Does
right.
does that meter do that? You know, like, you know, 140 would be considered potentially high.
You know, we are going to build that into the meter. This software today does not. But our goal is to provide a meter which is not only very good and useful for the blind and visually impaired, but for people who are what they call in the business numeracy impaired. And for people with numeracy and other kinds of cognitive impairments, a lot of information can be put in that will be helpful. We're going to put that in. Whether we do it so that all the meters say all the things probably will be selectable, and we haven't thought a lot about that yet because we haven't got our grant yet. But even here, you'll notice that in many cases we really guide you with great care in making settings and so forth. That particular thing, Jeff, we don't do, but we definitely plan to do it.
Okay.
Now tell us what you're doing now. I heard a click.
I'm just playing with the vial of scripts.
Okay.
Yeah, he's just playing with the vial.
Okay. Now, but for those of us who don't know, what is the vial of scripts? What do you mean?
The vial of scripts, I'll let you touch it.
All right.
It's just a little bottle, like almost
okay,
like a pill bottle.
Okay, like a pill bottle.
Very secure top.
I see.
And inside are a bunch of strips with, and each strip can read your blood glucose level one time.
Okay.
And only one time.
So sort of like litmus paper type?
Yeah, kind of like that, yeah.
Okay.
Before we do a reading, though, I want to show you the options menu, because I think it's good.
Okay.
I'll guide you through one option so you'll see how the meter works. Okay.
Oh, what option do you wish to select? Press the question mark for a list of available options. Question, for the date, press D. For the time, press T. For the current calibration setting, press C.
So just to show calibration, since no competition can do calibration, I'll show this to you.
C. The calibration value currently set is 17. To change the calibration value, press the Enter key. To leave the calibration value as it is, press any other key.
So I'm not going to let you make this change without really wanting to.
Okay, and before you...
Change the calibration value.
Before you...
Enter the three-digit calibration code from your package of test strips.
Zero.
Stop chain loop.
Two. Zero.
The calibration code has been changed to 20. Ready. Press H for help with the available meter commands.
Yeah.
Okay, and before you go any further, just let me clarify, because I know people will wonder. The beeping was part of the PC,
yes.
Not the... Yeah,
that's
okay.
Correct.
Yeah, I just want to make sure people...
turn the volume.
Yeah.
Loop, what option do you wish to select?
I need to rechange the calibration level to back to what it needs to be. So
see, the calibration value currently set is 20. To change the calibration value, press the Enter key. To leave the calibration value as it is, press any other key. Change the calibration value. Please enter the three-digit calibration code from your package of test strips. To stop changing the calibration code, press the space bar.
So you can get out if you wanted to.
0, 1, 7.
The calibration code has been changed to 17. Ready.
Now we're back to the correct calibration level for this vial of strips. The problem is that level, that value has to be read from the vial by your pharmacist or somebody else. The truth is,
please insert a test strip into the meter.
Even though we can do this feature, it probably doesn't matter anymore, because the newer meters from Abbott are not going to require a calibration level.
I was just going to ask you that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I'm going to move the meter, Marlena, over to this side.
All right.
You notice that it's beginning to demand a test strip.
Please insert a test strip into the meter.
It knows one isn't there.
Yes, he's quite insistent.
And I'm going to get one out of the vial. One of our decisions, you know, will be how often do we remind people to do this.
Are the menus configurable so that you can sort of... deal with the verbosity?
Into the meter.
Not now.
Okay.
They probably will have to be, because I think people will get tired of
some
of the details. Some will get tired of it, some won't.
Almost like a beginner and intermediate.
Sure. Exactly.
I can never remember which way these scripts go, but my meter is nice. It will tell me if I did it right or not.
Please insert a test strip into the meter.
Every 15 seconds.
I put it in. Did I do it right? Good question.
It's not coming back now.
Please insert a test.
You did it wrong.
Backwards. Okay.
Please apply blood to the strip.
Okay. So now I know it's right, which is nice. The meter won't have you go on until you've done what
Please apply blood to the strip.
Now I'm going to take a little bottle of solution out of this pack. I'm going to pour some solution into
Please
my hand.
Please apply blood to the strip.
The solution mimics the action of blood for the strip.
And this is normally where someone would use a lancet on their finger?
Yes, they would now poke themselves and apply the blood.
Okay.
Through that control solution,
yes,
this is called.
Please apply blood to the strip.
How particular do they need to be about applying the blood to the strip? How difficult is that?
Please apply blood to the strip.
It depends. It's an issue. It's certainly an issue for me at the moment.
Please apply blood to the strip.
Yes, I know.
He's tough. He lasts his palm of his hand.
Please apply blood to the strip. Sample detected. Please apply blood to the strip. Strip is now filled. Please apply blood to the strip. The blood sample is being tested. Just a moment, please. Result equal 106. Ready. Press
there you go.
Wow, that's very fast.
There you go. I can't help but be proud of this because it took a long time to get that testing process right.
Wow.
And,
please insert a test strip into the meter.
Yes, I took the strip out. So another
please
thing
insert
we're
a test strip into the meter.
We're very proud about is the whole issue of logging. As you know, there is no meter today that you can buy in the store that will show you the log. And you can do
space ready.
You can do
press H for help with the available meter commands.
You can do two things with the log. And first, I'll show you. Just you want to hear the log?
Yeah.
I'll let you hear the log.
Yeah, I want to hear the log.
I heard it, though.
March 21st, 2007, 1946, 106 milligrams. March 21st, 2007, 1516, 113 milligrams. March 2nd, 2007, 1641, 98 milligrams.
Wow.
February 21st, 2007, 2120, 110 milligrams. February 2nd, 2007, 1139, 68 milligrams. January 29th, 2007.
Now, can I print that out to take to my doctor?
Yeah, I made it stop.
Press H for help with the available meter command.
That's fine.
Please insert a test strip.
But the more you hear and the bigger your log is,
press H for help with the available meter commands
to deal with. So we have a second mode, which will probably be the mode we keep. And that's to read the log.
There are 14 entries in the log. Press the number one for the most current entry or the number of another entry you would like to read.
Let's say I want to hear my previous entry today, so I'll do two.
To March 21st, 2007, 1516, 113 milligrams. Press P for previous or N for next most recent reading.
So now I know that. Maybe I want to go next.
And reading. Your most recent reading is March 21st, 2007, 1946, 106 milligrams. Press R to repeat, or P for previous reading.
And so we give you a way
space ready
to go through
H
the log
with the available meter
and do it either by number or by next and previous. And really, I find that's much more usable data as it happens.
Yeah.
Now I'll exit the program.
You are exiting the Freestyle Meter program. Please unplug the cable from the meter now to preserve the battery in the meter. Please also remember to close your container of test strips, firmly secure the cover, and store it in a cool, dry place. Thank you.
Now, that's a lot of information for someone to hear every single time.
Mm-hmm.
Although Abbott has actually asked that we retain that
information
for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this all over their material, their literature, and they feel it's important to bug people about this, whether they want to be bugged about it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to try and provide that level of detail, at least in one mode, for all users. You know, new users who are visually impaired will benefit from it. Cognitively impaired people may always benefit from it. And so we'll have that there. That, in a nutshell, is the meter. It certainly isn't every function, but I think you can see, you know, where we're going, and you can certainly hear from the help and from the main menu and from the options menu what we really want to accomplish in accessible blood glucose testing.
What are your next steps?
The next step is to take this software, and I don't want to say too much about details right now. We're negotiating with a number of companies, makers of products such as Braille Notes and Packmates and so forth, and we would like to make a Braille Note or a Packmate or a Level Star icon the receptor of data, just as a computer is.
Ah.
Because let's face it, people are much more apt to use as a reader, say, a Braille Note PK.
Sure.
It's portable, it's there, and they won't necessarily mind so much attaching their meter to it with a cable for a little while. So we're working on that. Where the other thing we're doing, and this is what we're trying to get grant funding for, we want to take this meter and make it into a standalone product where you just have one thing you can carry in your pocket or your purse or whatever, and it talks, it has a microprocessor. It will do everything you can do on the PC prototype, but all in one little box you carry with you.
So I'm sure that our listeners now who need these meters are saying, when will I have it?
When is difficult. We're probably going to make the first test prototypes in the next 3 months. And then, of course, we have to test them. We have to go after FDA approval. And you know, it's a sore point with me, but some of the meters, these cheap meters that are out there today, do not have FDA approval. Legally, they're supposed to have it. Everybody turns their back, and I guess that's okay. But Bay Area Digital is not going to turn its back, because we believe that the only way to move forward credibly is to do it in conjunction with meter manufacturers in the U.S. with FDA approval, the things that you need to have. So we have to go through that. That'll take about 3 or 4 months. We are applying for an NIH grant to be able to build these things in more quantity. And that grant funding cannot occur before next October. Once it occurs, we can move forward faster. But I think the reality is it's going to be very hard to have anything meaningful to put in people's hands before early 2008.
And if people would like to contact you to give you feedback or ask you questions, how might they do that?
Well, the quickest way is to either give me a call at Bay Area Digital, 415-217-6667, or drop me an email at chris@bayareadigital.us.
All right. Thank you, Chris. This is a fascinating demonstration. And before we close it, Jeff is a diabetic who also would benefit from this. Did you have any questions?
No, I think it was pretty thorough, and it will be really exciting to get this into the hands of people to have truly something that's, you know, accessible. You know, the Prodigy and the Abbott meters, which are available now, while it's a very good start, don't offer nearly what this does, and it will be a very exciting time, especially since Roche has discontinued the voice meter.
So it would be fair to say, Jeff, you're pretty excited for this to hit the market.
That's right. I will buy one.
Marlena.
Yes.
Before you go, there's one thing. It's a thread that we started and then stopped because we were in the middle of the demonstration. The issue of putting blood on the strip.
Yes.
You saw, even with my test solution, I had a little bit of time lag and difficulty getting that done. I am not going to divulge any details right now, but I will say that Bay Area Digital is in the process of applying for a patent regarding the issue of blood placement on a strip.
That's significant.
Because of problems, I can't tell you anything more right now.
Sure.
But you'll be hearing more about that by the summer.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I think this is fascinating, and let's hook up again in the summer.
Okay.
And do another demo and see where we are.
Terrific.
From CSUN 2007, I'm Marlena with Jeff Bishop, Chris Gray, Marvelena Casada, Gary Lieberg, and three dogs. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. Opinions expressed during the show do not reflect the views of ACB Radio or the American Council of the Blind, its members, employees, or board of directors. If you would like to participate in the live show at 2 hours Universal on Wednesdays, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
And this week we're here a little bit early due to our live segments that we're doing here tonight on Main Menu Live. And let's go ahead and bring on our guests tonight. We have Daryl Shandro, my normal co-host. Hello, Daryl.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening to you. Let me get your audio set there. Okay. And we have President of ACB and President of Bay Area Digital, Chris Gray. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful, actually. Thank you for asking.
Wow, this Skype 3.2 is very impressive. The quality's been very good.
Yes, it's been very, very impressive. And hopefully it won't crash like 3.1 has been doing. But, I've been using it for about a week and a half, and it seems to be doing quite well. We'll be opening up.
I have no idea what version I have loaded here. I doubt if it's 3.2. It might be.
Yeah, you're sounding excellent here. Before we open up the phone lines, we wanted to talk with Chris a little bit more about this exciting new product that is currently under development, and then we'll be opening up the phone lines. The number to call into is 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF, and we'll let you know when we'll be opening up those phone lines. Well, Chris, we really had a wonderful opportunity to sit down and talk with you at CSUN, and now that it's been a couple of months, Daryl, can you mute your mic?
Oh, yeah, hang on.
Okay. Now that it's been a couple of months, we thought we'd ask you if there has been any further developments with this new product that you're currently developing.
I wouldn't say there have been any major developments. I've been doing some work to get the software to function more capably in a Windows CE environment with a very, very minimal .NET framework around it, and looking into a lot of issues regarding using the software on a Microsoft platform versus a Linux platform that has implications for the creating of a standalone glucose meter. But those things have taken most of my time. Doing some grant writing has taken up more of my time. and really, to be honest, the further development of software hasn't been a part of the company plan for this couple of months.
Right.
We feel like we've got 80% of the software that we need. I can give you a brief roadmap, if you'd like, of what we will do to change the software from what was demonstrated at CSUN.
Okay, that would be great.
Okay. We need to do some cosmetic things. We forgot to put Q in the options menu to query the meter, so that's got to be added. And there's some minor housekeeping items like that. Sometimes the meter, after it does a reading, gets stuck, and you've got to turn the software off and turn it back on. I don't quite know what that is. It could be a Windows PC problem. It could be a different kind of software issue. But, you know, we're still at the stage, you know, Alpha 1 of battling those kinds of issues. In terms of functionality, we're going to create a version that does not have calibration for the newest Abbott meters. We're going to add a capability of marking a reading as to whether or not it is a reading with solution or a reading with real blood. And on the Abbott meter, there's a key you can press to do that for a log entry. We're going to create a keyboard key so that if a person does a test and it gets in the log because they've got a new vial of scripts and they want to test with solution for some reason, then they can mark that that reading as a sample reading and have it taken out of their personal log and put aside in the test log.
Okay.
That'll be a nice feature. I think we've got to do some improvements in the log itself. You heard where you can select a reading and then do next and previous. it looks like people want to be able to enter a number even at that point. So if you check reading number 3, next and previous is fine, but what if you want to go to reading number 6? You don't want to have to go previous, previous, previous. You just want to hit 6. And so we're going to add that as a feature. So things like that. But my feeling is that these are minor points that we can do at any phase of development up to the point where we actually have to begin certifying software with the FDA. So we're not really focusing on improvements and changes like that right now.
Now, this brings up a really interesting question, and then we're going to open up the phone lines to allow people to call in and ask questions. How long does that FDA process normally take with something like this? Do you have any idea, Chris?
Well, I know what the FDA says about it, and I have some kind of glimmer of what it might mean, having talked with other people who have gone through the approval. The approval process itself is in many ways a good thing. It's a protection for consumers. It's a safeguard, frankly, for sellers, because you have to know and prove that you've reached a certain level of capability with the meter. That's the upside. The downside is that, let's say, for example, I wanted to release this computer-based software, which I'd kind of like to do. And you might like it, Jeff, because it would require me to get this software in ship shape up front and have a real releasable version. The problem is that you've got to not only certify this version of the meter, so there goes $5,000 right quick.
Oh boy.
But then you've also got to put the software itself through a certification process. And that means you have to go to a third party, go through a lot of hoops with them, pay them, then they have to go to the FDA with your certification. It's time-consuming, and it is not inexpensive. I won't say that it's horribly expensive, but I think what we need to do, since we're a very small company with very little capital, we can't certify every version of the software for every type of meter we release. We're gonna want to certify once and then take one or two products to the FDA and go onto the market that way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The FDA is a considerable problem to deal with. Some companies just don't bother. They manage to stay on the sideline, the periphery, and the FDA doesn't notice them, or I don't know just how they do it, frankly, but we're not going to take that route.
Well, that's really good. Okay, we're going to go ahead and open up the phone lines. Again, the number is 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. Now, one of the questions that Marlena asked, and I didn't know if you could, while we're waiting for a call, one of the questions that Marlena asked, and I didn't know if you could expound on that in reference to the software. A lot of times, you know, your doctor will have you bring in either a printout or your actual meter. Are you going to allow the software to take a download of the settings of the meter and print that out, you know, and graph it, that type of a thing?
Well, yes and no. How about that for a real direct answer?
Okay.
Basically, here's how I view that particular topic. When you have a meter in your hand, you can review the log visually on the meter. Now, it is true that the meter will tell you some things that we have not brought forward in the software at this point. For example, the meter might, I think that the current Abbott meters give you your average reading over the last 10 readings. We don't provide that in the current speaking software, and we need to. If you were to show the meter to your doctor, that'd be helpful for your doctor. And of course, your doctor could zip through the readings and see, oh, it was this way one day, that way another day, or, you know, go through the four readings a day and so forth. We believe that taking your meter and letting a doctor work with your meter as they would work with any other meter is the right solution for that. But you are correct that there's a lot of other information that people do bring to their physicians. They can bring graphs of their daily readings, weekly readings, monthly readings, and they do it through software provided by meter manufacturers. And that software has huge accessibility issues. We tend to believe that the solution for that is to work with Abbott and with others and help them create accessible software that a blind person can use, and create the graphs, print them out, and bring those to their physician. So you would, attach your meter to a computer, use the Abbott software, the Roche software, whatever, and then work from there. We don't really plan at this time to reinvent that software. We do plan and have had some discussions with Abbott anyway about working with them to make their software a heck of a lot more accessible than it is today.
Okay, great. Chris, we have a caller. Let's bring the caller on. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live. Hello, caller. Apparently the caller is gone. Let's try to bring them back here. All right. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Yes, my name is Diane Healy.
Hello, Diane. You need to turn down your computer for us.
Okay.
We'll give you just a minute. We'll bring your volume back up. Yeah,
beauty of mixing shows.
Oh, just wonderful stuff.
I'm trying to get it. Okay, am I still on?
You are. Actually, we can still hear your computer.
Okay,
let's go.
Let me walk away from
that. That's okay. Go ahead and ask your question, and we'll take your question off the air. You can listen on the air, okay?
Yes. What I would like to know is the size of what the standalone meter is going to be.
Okay. And
also, what is the price range? I know Chris can't give the regular price, but what range will be on that?
Okay, great. Thanks for calling in, and we'll let Chris answer that. Go ahead, Chris.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you, Diane. Both good questions and both difficult questions to answer. So I guess, I'll give you my hope for the future, but I have to tell you it is more a hope than a promise, so please accept the answers in that light. In terms of size, we start out with the Freestyle Freedom. And we know that a meter with access built into it cannot be any smaller than the Freedom. So that gives you a kind of a lower end way of looking at things. And the Freestyle is a very small meter. You can hold it in your hand, in the palm of your hand, very easily. It would fit in the breast pocket of a man's shirt easily. You could carry... Well, maybe I should put it this way. Marvelina could carry many of them in her purse. I don't know about what kind of purse you carry, Diane, but in any event, it's not hard to carry that meter around in a purse. By the time we build a speaker of an adequate size into the meter and the chips to make the speech appear in the meter, it's going to be somewhat bigger. How much bigger is hard to say at this point. Maybe 30% bigger. We'd like to believe it won't be a lot bigger than that. And the goal is to not have it be a whole lot bigger, than any of the competition, such as the Advocate or the Prodigy that are sitting out there today. We don't really have a firm price in mind, but I would say that we're probably looking at a price point quite a bit higher than the Prodigy or the Advocate. We do quite a bit more. This meter is designed specifically for use by visually impaired people, unlike the Prodigy or the Advocate. And as far as a price point, we might be looking at something like $250 for a meter. Now, that could change. It just depends on whether we do get good grant support from the government or grant support from private foundations. But that's probably about where we want to come in at an initial price point.
Now, Chris, if the person wanted to buy the meter themselves, meaning, you know, say that they could just go out and get that meter, you know, that you're going to support, would the price potentially drop? Or are you looking at that as being the software price?
It would depend on what the person wanted to buy. No, I'm looking at that as a standalone meter price.
Okay.
For an accessible standalone meter.
Oh, because you're going to have to alter it slightly, won't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's going to have to be in a different case with, you know, sound chips and speaker and amplifier and
okay.
various things like that that make it work.
Okay.
Now, we might have a product, depending on how things go with the FDA, where a person could get their meter, and often you can get a meter from Abbott. Or, you know, Abbott gives meters to clinics and doctors
and hospitals
at no charge. And then you could use the computer-based software if you were prepared to use a meter in that way, and we would sell that for considerably less than $249.
And I'm sure insurance companies, just like they did with the VoiceMate, will probably pick up on, you know, if there's a medical need, there, you know, then more than likely, I'm sure insurance companies will assist in the purchase of such a device.
We will definitely be making the meter available through Abbott, through durable medical equipment houses, and through the kinds of facilities that can make it much easier, if not simple. It's never simple with insurance, you know.
No.
But
yeah, know that.
Insurance companies to pay for it.
Absolutely. Okay, we have another caller, and let's bring that caller in. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hello. How
Hello.
Are you?
Well, we're doing great. Do you have a question
great.
For Chris tonight?
I first, I want to make a comment. The Freestyle is a wonderful meter. It's very accurate and all that. It's small. The speech for the software sounds wonderful. I'm really excited about that. But there's one issue that nobody has addressed yet, and I really haven't heard an answer to that tonight yet.
Okay.
And that is the difficulty of placing a sample on the strip.
Oh, yes.
And I know that you're working on something, but, you know, there are mornings when it takes me 6 or 7 tries, and companies will say, well, if it beeps, then it's okay. Well, it isn't.
No.
It beeps when it makes contact. It doesn't beep after it has enough.
Yeah.
And it, as a blind person, I have no idea whether I have any at all. So if there's any way that the meter can take its own sample, that, to me, would be a godsend.
Okay.
You have it talking, which is wonderful. That solves half of the problem. The other half of the problem is, which more importantly, I think, is placing a proper sample on the strip.
Okay, well, let's let Chris answer the question. If you can listen on the air, that would be great, okay?
Sure.
All right, great. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I agree. Let me say two things. The first is, it went by real fast, and I want to point out to the caller and to all the listeners that this meter does truly know when it has enough blood on the strip. And in fact, you may have heard the meter saying, you know, the blood is detected and at the very end it said, the strip is full. It really means the strip is full. It knows electronically, and that is a help. But that doesn't really answer the caller's question. I'm just pointing it out because you will have that greater level of security with the Freestyle. And I'm glad you know the Freestyle, by the way. That's good to hear. Now, as to blood placement itself, that is a different problem than meter accessibility, and I would agree that it is as big a problem. For some people, in some cases, it's even a bigger problem than an accessible meter, depending on your situation and many things. We do have a solution, actually two different solutions, regarding the placement of blood on the strip. One is a low-tech solution, and it when you see how it works, you'll be surprised at how simplistic it is in a way, and yet how effective. It's something I can't describe in detail right now. I'm in the midst of applying for a patent on the device, because it is so low-tech that I anticipate that when certain other vendors have a look at it, it will be so easy for them to replicate that they'll want to. I want them to as well, but only under a license to Bay Area Digital. We have engaged a patent attorney, and I keep thinking within weeks, but surely before a convention this summer, I'll be able to demonstrate how this device works and let people have a chance to experience what it might be like to use the device. But it's very simple, it's very foolproof, and it's not going to be an expensive device. So we really are looking at the problem. We're hoping to address it in the short term. And rest assured that I do appreciate the significance of the issue. And we may well get this blood placement device to market quicker than the meter itself.
That'd be great.
And that would be fine, because it would work with more than one kind of strip and one kind of meter.
Yeah, wow, that would be fantastic.
The second approach, you'll be equally frustrated by my answer, but there is a more high-tech approach that I'm working on directly in conjunction with Abbott Diabetes Care. Unfortunately, I'm bound by non-disclosure agreement from commenting on it, except to say that it is a more high-tech solution. It is anticipated that this will be a more automatic solution. Of course, you know that means it's going to be a more expensive solution, but I don't think that it will be so expensive that it will be prohibitive for people. And it is a very exciting solution. So, you know, there really is some great work being done in this area. And I think that not only for blind people, blood placement is becoming more and more difficult for anybody that has, let's say you're a little older and you have a problem with a tremor in your hand, any number of other issues. And for those folks, the smaller the sample of blood, the harder it is for them to see it and find it with the end of the strip. So the issue is big enough that there's a lot of interest in getting it solved.
Well, the main issue with this, of course, is that the accuracy, you know, the accuracy of the meter reading can vary significantly based on blood placement.
Well, you see, the AccuCheck and all the older style meters, and that includes the Prodigy and the Advocate, these meters use strips that don't have autofill technology. They do have capillary action for wicking the blood away from your finger into the strip. But they don't have the autofill technology to know and communicate to the meter when the strip is full. All they can communicate is, do I have enough blood for you to do a test? And the meter says, oh, I see it has enough. But enough doesn't mean for those type of strips that they're full. It just means they have blood. The autofill strips used by the Freestyle, by the newest meters from the other major manufacturers, Bayer, Roche, LifeScan, they know when they have blood but don't have enough blood. And that's important. And this is a feature which will distinguish the meter we put out from anything else out on the market today in the U.S.
And you did say that this perhaps will be something you'll be able to demonstrate at the ACB convention.
Well, I can certainly demonstrate. I'm hoping to demonstrate the blood placement device, and I may be able even to demonstrate a prototype standalone meter at that point, if all goes well.
Great. Well, speaking of the ACB convention, we have the president of the ACB Diabetics in Action with us now. Hello, Dee. How's it going?
Fine.
Oh, good. Welcome to Main Menu.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, Dee, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great.
Do you have a question for
Well,
Chris?
I don't have a question, but I want to say that we, as the president of ACBDA, that we want to welcome Chris as our second speaker at the seminar on July 1st.
Oh, great.
So, and we're looking forward to seeing the meter and hearing more about it.
Absolutely.
I didn't have any questions. I had some, but as the interview went on earlier, he answered them.
That's great. Okay. Well, good. Now, do you find, Dee, that this, whole issue of blood placement and meter reliability has created issues for you?
Yes, it has. And I'll be honest, I don't check. Because of it, I don't check my blood like I should.
Yeah, you're not the only one. I tend to rely on my A1C more than anything else until I get
something
more reliable.
Yeah, I do, too.
I
think we all do that. You know, it can be so frustrating.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, there's even been some research that says that at least for type 2 diabetics, it's much more important for people who are type 1 to be able to more closely monitor things, and for some type 2 diabetics. But they're saying that for a lot of type 2 diabetics, that testing versus not testing is just, they're not finding that it really is that helpful. But I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that people are not doing accurate, testing as well. And I think that could be really difficult. So, okay,
right.
Okay.
And also, Chris is going to be at our Iowa State convention.
Oh, you got Chris traveling all over the place.
Right.
Well, that's good.
So I'll get to hear him a couple times.
Gee, I'll bring a real meter that weekend, and my laptop. I'm planning to bring those things, and
great.
Let you give it a try.
All right.
All right, Dee.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing you both places.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thanks for calling in, Dee, and we'll talk to you soon, huh?
Yes, see you in July.
Okay, well, great. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. And, Daryl, you had some questions that have come in on MSN.
Yes. First of all, Philip would like to ask, he says, I've been hearing about these One Touch and some other meters that promise to reduce the pain and allow you to check other places besides the fingers. And that could be, I'm just adding that could be important since, we use our fingers for braille reading. Does any of this apply to the technology you're working on, Chris?
Yes, it does. The Freestyle meter itself is certified by the FDA for what they call alternate site testing. And that's what this question really relates to. So you can use your forearm, your thigh, various other places to take blood from that are not as sensitive and read them with this meter. Now, the blood placement work that I'm doing will be applicable to those sites as well. So, yes.
Excellent.
Alternate site is important, and as I've had quite a series of shall we say, discussions with people at the National Institutes of Health, and I've tried and had to work very hard to get them to take alternate site testing seriously for blind people. I said, you know, no one likes to test their finger, but for a population that relies on our hands the way that we do, it's even more difficult. And I think they finally are getting that point.
Okay, Daryl, did you have any more coming in from MSN?
And Tina had Tina just said, you know, she was listening to your demo with the laptop and everything, and she's like, how do you check your blood without, you know, getting the blood and everything all over the keyboard?
Let's ask Tina to comment, because she's actually right here. Hello, Tina.
Hi.
Hello, Tina.
Maybe it's, I prefaced this MSN message with, maybe this is a really stupid question, but, yeah, because I was just kind of curious, because, I don't actually have diabetes or use a meter or anything, but I've had my blood tested just because it runs in my family, and so, you know, I know generally what some of the process is like, and I'm thinking, well, God, I mean, not only do you have the problem of the, you know, the blood placement on the strip and everything, but then, you know, you need to make sure it quits bleeding before you actually press the key on your keyboard.
Well, that's certainly true. Of course, when you're actually using the meter and you're doing a test, you can be very passive in the sense that the software will tell you that the meter's getting the blood when it has all the blood it needs and what the result is. So at least you can have the result without using your computer. What you'll find, though, is in most cases, if you are diabetic and test yourself all the time, you might touch a tissue to your finger for a moment or two afterwards, but you don't really continue to bleed.
Generally.
Generally. Yeah. I mean, there's always an exception.
Yes.
And, I guess it would depend on, like you were saying,
you know,
about the
different
testing.
You may need to be somewhat careful. But, and that's frankly one reason why people prefer a standalone device. But chances are, in most cases, that's not going to be a problem for you.
Okay. Well, also, too, I just wanted to comment, given the increasing population of elderly folks and people who are, you know, losing their vision, you know, have you maybe approached organizations like AARP to see if they could possibly even help you with any kind of grant funding or, you know, any kind of, like, a grassroots kind of senior type of organization?
Okay, Tina, we're going to let him answer that, and
sure.
If you can listen on the air, that would be great. Okay, go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, as I understood, the question had to do with going after funding sources like AARP or groups like that. We have tried to make some dialogue occur with an organization that I would have thought would be an obvious supporter, the American Diabetes Association, and have had no luck. AARP has not responded to any of our queries or letters on the topic. And I think the reality is that these organizations just don't see this as an important enough need for them to pay attention to it.
It's shocking, isn't it? That, you know, there's supposed to be 21 million diabetics, of which a third of them don't even know they're diabetic in America right now. And, you know, one of the highest complications, of course, is what? Blindness. And you would think that, you know, with something like that, you know, they would want to pay attention to that. That's just unbelievable to me. I don't quite understand it, and it's very, very, very frustrating.
I understand it better from the manufacturers of the meters. I'm not totally sympathetic, but I've talked with the people, you know, in R&D and in other areas of Abbott Diabetes Care enough to recognize that they do have a lot of things pulling them in many different directions. But the American Diabetes Association, come on, folks.
Yeah, I sort of get the meters. I mean, but
yeah,
but I don't get it. So, well, Chris, we want to really thank you for coming on to Main Menu Live this week. We really do appreciate it. And I guess the next time we'll hear from you in a in sort of a ACB radio presentation will be at the ACB convention. We'll talk with Marlena and Chrissy and make sure we try to get the ACB diabetic stuff covered so that we get your presentation on the air here on ACB radio. So,
yeah, fantastic.
Did you have any closing comments before we let you go?
Well, you may hear from me in some other contexts on ACB radio, but I'll just leave that as a little dangling participle for
ooh,
the moment.
Ooh. And I'll have to call you.
Okay. They're not meter related or technology related. Maybe, Jeff, I would just say one thing. For those who hear this and you're not diabetic or you don't have an interest in a glucose meter, Bay Area Digital has a short and long-term plan with regard to other types of medical equipment. We're working right now to prototype a talking oximeter, or as some say, oximeter, measures your blood oxygen level. Very important for people with asthma, for people who are recovering from pneumonia and so forth. And it's becoming more and more an item that people are using in their homes. So we're working on that and many other projects as well.
Hey, I wish you get some talking fitness equipment out there, Chris.
Well, we're looking into that as well.
Okay.
That's a difficult one.
Yeah, that is a difficult one.
Into it.
That's even a difficult one for people to even recognize as it being a problem. I mean, for someone that's gone to a gym, you know, quite frequently, of which it's made my life rather difficult, unless my wife, you know, goes with me, I tend to not want to go. It's very frustrating.
Yeah.
Very
frustrating. I know. You got to find someone to set the equipment. You got to, what equipment is free?
Yeah.
No, I don't want to get too close to that big old wheel that runs the Stairmaster or whatever.
Well, and people are not necessarily, you know, I mean, people are wearing workout clothes, you know, so you don't want to get too close to people because then they might think, you know, who knows? So it's a real touchy situation. So,
well, the Nautilus company has their headquarters office in Vancouver, Washington, and I've been thinking about maybe going up to Seattle and see my family. I might take the train and stop and spend a couple hours at Nautilus and see if I can make any headway with them. And there are others. I mean, Nordic Track has some devices that might work, and we'll just work on that. But
that's right.
I am interested as well in that kind of equipment, and it really does fit in with the mission of Bay Area Digital. I mean, it's certainly a well-known fact that if you're a diabetic, you're going to be in a lot better health if you exercise.
Absolutely.
It's a key to keeping your blood glucose down. So
absolutely. All right, Chris. We'll again, thank you very, very much for joining us tonight. It's been very, very informative, and we're looking forward to hearing more about it come July.
Terrific.
Thanks for coming on the show, Chris.
All right, Chris.
All right, thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Daryl.
We'll talk to you soon, Chris. Bye-bye.
Okay, you bet.
Mm-hmm. That was Chris Gray, president of ACB and president of Bay Area Digital. And next, we're going to work on getting our next guest on. And, Daryl, I'm going to go ahead and hang up here, and you can create a new conference for that.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and then what we're going to do now is we're going to go ahead and let you listen now to a presentation from Jamie Pauls. Jamie Pauls is back this week from Access Watch. He has a new blog, and he wants to tell us all about that, and as well as a book, which we actually had Woody Anna Dresner on Main Menu quite a while ago now, all about this book. But it doesn't hurt to refresh everybody's mind, and we'll be having her on, we're trying really, really hard to get her on in the next few weeks to talk about an exciting new venture that she's involved with, a new book that's coming out from National Braille Press. So without further ado, let's listen to Jamie Pauls.
This week, in place of a software review, I'd like to do a book review. I just recently purchased and read Anna Dresner's book, Blog On, available from National Braille Press. You can find the book at www.nbp.org or www.braille.com. The book covers the essentials of blogging, what it is, and how to get started. It especially goes into some detail about how to set up a WordPress account. You can see the initial results of my working through the book by visiting the new AccessWatch blog at http://accesswatch.wordpress.com. At $10 for the PortaBook download, I highly recommend it. It's a book worth having, and I'll give it a 5 rating. Come visit us at www.accesswatch.info. Have a great week.
You're listening to Main Menu Live, airing at 2 hours Universal on Wednesday. To participate in the show, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
That's right, and we'll be opening up those phone lines here in a few minutes. We first want to give our next guest an opportunity to give you some information and get a chance to talk with her for a few minutes. And let's welcome to Main Menu Live this week, Karen McCall. Hello, Karen. How's it going?
It's going great. The weather up here outside of Toronto is fabulous.
Really? What is it there?
It's about 68 to 70 degrees Fahrenheit and sunny. Well, it was before the sun set.
Wow. Well,
that'd be wonderful.
We're going to be in the middle 90s this week. And, Dale, can you go on your other mic? Because we're creating a little bit of an echo, if possible. Okay, yeah, so that's great. I had an opportunity to meet Karen at CSUN this year, and we were both sitting next to each other during the WindowEyes presentation, and then we had an opportunity to walk over to the Google presentation. And we really had a great opportunity to talk as we were walking around, and I learned quite a bit about her, and I asked her, I said, hey, so can you come on Main Menu Live and talk to our listeners and take questions, and because she obviously has a lot of expertise in some really interesting areas. And so I want to really warmly welcome Karen to the show. One of the things that really fascinated me was the fact that she is actually utilizing a tablet. And first of all, Karen, are you totally blind? You're partial, right?
Yes, I am legally blind. I am a JAWS user simply because I can use a computer much faster using a screen reader than I can using screen magnification. I use screen magnification if I'm doing any kind of fine work or digital work, but for basic everyday functions, I'm a screen reader user.
Okay, great. So when she said that she was actually using a tablet, my first impression of a tablet, of course, is this thing that's flat, that, you know, it's just a screen and you write on it with a stylus or whatever, and you know, similar to the PDAs, you know, type of a thing. Can you talk to us about, you know, for example, which tablet are you using, Karen?
I'm using a Motion Computing LS800, and it's my second tablet. I have a Motion Computing M1400, uh-huh. which is a slightly larger tablet. It's about an equivalent to an 8.5 by 11 inch page. And I chose the slate configuration, which means that my monitor or my screen is not attached to my keyboard because I do have a visual disability. And I find that having the keyboard separate, I can use either wireless Bluetooth or USB keyboard, allows me to position the screen where I can see it. So I don't feel like a chipmunk, you know, hunched over a peanut trying to use Zoom text or look at my screen and use a traditional convertible or laptop configuration for a tablet.
That's great. So now, and JAWS runs on that okay?
Oh yeah, I've been using JAWS 5.1 on my tablet. That was the, other than Office, that was the second application that got installed on there.
Wow, that's great. So now, what operating system runs on the tablet? XP? It's an XP edition of tablet, yeah. Right?
Yeah, it's XP tablet PC, and it is a Windows Professional flavor. So you do need a professional version of your adaptive technology.
Okay. Well, very, very interesting. And you know, traditionally there has been some issues with video drivers on some machines. you know, with JAWS, and has that been an issue for you at all on the tablet?
Not with the motion. I contacted Next Generation Technology because they had done some work with adaptive technology and tablet computers and did some research before I started. And that was one of the reasons I chose the motion computing, is because the impression that I got was that it's a little workhorse. And it is. It's quite a sturdy machine. I take it everywhere I go. Now, the LS800 that I have now has about a 6.5 by 8 inch screen, so it's cut my screen in half, but I'm not, most of the time I'm only using the screen for a visual reference. I'm not really reading the screen. I just want to make sure that things are, you know, flying across it as they should.
Or lining
up.
So
for me, it's
stuff
the,
like that.
Yeah, it's the perfect size.
Wow.
And I've managed to go from a computer case on wheels to just an oversized sort of purse or handbag, and that carries all of my peripheral equipment and my tablet. So it's even
wow.
helped. Yeah, it's even more ergonomic.
So how much, without me getting too personal, how much would it cost to get into something like that?
If you're looking at a convertible, you can get in for around, let me see, I've seen them for around $1,600 US, and the motion computing also has versions of their tablet, depending on what it is you're looking at, that start around 15. Mine, I put a gigabyte of RAM on board simply because I knew that I was going to be using adaptive technology.
Sure.
And I get about 3 hours of battery life out of the battery, but I wanted to make sure that since I was using a combination of adaptive technology, that I was, you know, going to have enough memory to run it. When I do use the handwriting tool, I'm using Windows Magnifier with JAWS and the handwriting, the input panel, because when I input something and say send it down to the application, JAWS will read it as soon as it goes in, and so I have that auditory feedback.
Great, very cool.
Tablet PCs also have QWERTY keyboards?
I have a USB keyboard, and I use it. It's a traditional sort of laptop configuration. I also have a Bluetooth keyboard that I can use with it. You can hook up anything you want with it. If you get the convertible, then it would have a traditional laptop keyboard built into it.
Okay. Very, very interesting. So, wow, so between $1,500 and $1,600 for the tablet, and then, you know, traditionally these portable USB keyboards are, what, about 100 or so?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, something
well,
like
and
that.
The thing I like about it is it's a small footprint, and I'm using big Windows applications. So everything that I would use, my DAISY authoring tools, Adobe Acrobat, Dreamweaver, FrontPage, Microsoft Office, they're not pocket versions. They're the full version of the software.
Very interesting.
What would be the benefit for a blind person to bother with a tablet PC?
Well, if it's something that's small enough, if you have an LS800, that if you went completely Bluetooth, you could conceivably have the guts of the unit in your briefcase and just be working from a keyboard and a headset. And you would have access to all of your big Windows applications, unlike the PDAs or note takers. So that would be one advantage.
Yeah, the main thing is portability, right? I mean, that's...
For me, that's what it was. It was portability. And then once I started using it, I found all of these other things I could do and tools I could use. The tablet PC operating system under XP also had built-in voice recognition, so I could use that to some limited extent.
Interesting.
Now that it's built into, I think it's actually built into Vista, that becomes a non-issue. But at the time, it was one of the selling points.
Will that run Vista, the tablet?
They'll probably have I would imagine so, because it's a Windows XP Pro flavor. And I can't see, with all the tablets out there, I can't see them not having a Vista flavor of the tablet PC.
Okay. All right.
It's one of the reasons that I have the web page on the Carloon Communications site just devoted to tablet technology and people with disabilities is because every time I tried to talk about tablet and disability, people would automatically go, oh, handwriting, blind people can't use that.
Well, that's exactly
and
what
dismiss,
I did. I mean,
yeah, dismiss the technology without even, you know, taking a look at it. And not only dismissing it for people who are totally blind, but any kind of visual disability. And I think one of its strengths can be for people with visual disabilities, as well as learning disabilities and other things. So I made my Introduction to Tablet Technology book available free on the website and my using Microsoft Office, OneNote book free on the website just to demonstrate to people that you can use these tools strictly from a keyboard and using adaptive technology.
Oh, well, great. Well, I wasn't even aware that the OneNote stuff was there. We'll talk about that for sure. We've opened up the phone line. The number is 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. And, of course, we have MSN. You want to give the information for that, Daryl?
Yes, that's mainmenu@acbradio.org, and we already have a question.
Okay, go ahead and ask it, Daryl.
Tina says, if you're blind and you learn the shape of the letters, can you use the handwriting functionality? Or could it be adapted with a Slate and Stylus type interface?
Oh, now that's interesting. I haven't tried it because the input panel is always in the same place. So if you develop a template that would fit over that, conceivably you could use the handwriting tool. Well, there's something interesting, and now I'm off on another project.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I don't know. It wouldn't recognize my handwriting.
Yeah, but it would. But it could recognize a Braille input scheme.
Yeah. There's potential for that too. We have a caller. Let's bring the caller in, and we still want to also get to OneNote PDF accessibility and Office 2007. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Well, hi, everybody. It's Beth from Newport News, Virginia.
Well, hello, Beth.
Hi. Hope everybody's doing real well tonight.
We're doing great. How can we help you tonight?
Great. Well, I have a question. I'm finding this extremely interesting about tablet PCs. Now, I do not own one, and I'm not going to try to quote any of this article because I have not studied it and taken notes on it. But on Blind Cool Tech, Robert Carter did an interview, not an interview, he did a podcast about the GW Micro Smalltalk, and I wondered if Karen had researched that, and I'm just curious, as I'll get out, to know if she did research it, what was her decision path of, you know, getting the one that she got versus the Smalltalk, besides the fact, of course, that uses Window Eyes. So thank you very much, and I will listen with great interest and anticipation on the air. Thanks.
I actually do have Window Eyes on my tablet, as well as other adaptive.
And is that
technology.
Working on the, is that working
on
the tablet?
And Kurzweil 1000. So, because I'm doing training and tutorials, I need a variety, anything that won't fight on the system. But if it fights on a tablet, generally it'll fight on any other kind of system, too. I haven't looked at the GW Micro product. I've been using tablet technology almost since it first was sold in stores because I tended to gravitate toward it and saw it as a solution for me in terms of portability. So I haven't looked at the GW Micro product, but
okay.
Again, there's another thing I can do.
Yeah, another avenue. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. 866-400-JEFF, 866-400-5333. Derek, do we have any questions on the MSN side of the house?
That's pretty much it. Tina just wanted to make sure that we got the address for Karen's website.
Oh, don't worry. Yes. Karen, why don't you go ahead and give that out now, and then, of course, we'll be repeating it quite a bit tonight as well.
Oh, dear, it's a long one. The usual HTT at the beginning, but it's iPrimus, and it's spelled iprimus.ca/... /Martha/ table.htm, and that will take you to the table of contents page, and there are some free things you can download there and get information on some of the books I've written on using JAWS with Microsoft Word, accessible PDF, how to create them, how to create accessible PDF documents, and information on other things I have on the site.
Are these books available in electronic format?
I am a paperless office. So for the most part, with the exception of the tagged PDF book, you get both a tagged PDF version and a DAISY version. And my books are available through IRTI. They're a company in California.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
they're the ones
on
who do the Eclipse Writer.
Right, yeah. And,
yeah.
And of course, that they should work with any other DAISY reader as well.
Yes, when I do the DAISY content, I test it in several DAISY readers. The book for document authors on accessible PDF is over 200 pages, and
wow.
It is available in tagged PDF format.
Now, is that book intended? We do have a caller, and we'll ask the caller to hold on a second. The authoring tagged PDF or accessible PDF book, is that book intended more for sighted people who are wanting to create accessible PDF, or is it both for blind and sighted people? Let's say you have a PDF and you want to, if you own Adobe Professional and you have authoring rights within the PDF, that you could go in and actually, make the necessary corrections.
It's designed, it's called, the subtitle is Techniques for Document Authors. I encourage people who are screen reader users to stay when they've registered for one of my workshops, because I think that by talking through and listening through some of the issues related to the accessibility in PDF and how to create a more accessible PDF document, then you can go out and help the people who are providing PDF for you. There are things that you simply cannot do in Adobe Acrobat because of the way screen readers interact with the document.
Hmm.
And there are things like adding form fields that are strictly mouse driven. Because you have to visually,
drag them onto the page
the
or something. Yeah.
Exactly, and because the screen readers are always in virtual mode, you can, although you can activate the form field tool and you can draw a form field, you have no clue where it is on the page. So, the book is primarily intended for people who do author, and tag and repair PDF documents. However, if you are interested in learning about some of the issues and some of the techniques for creating better documents or better tagged PDF documents, then it might be of interest.
Okay, great. We have a caller. Let's bring the caller in. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi there, it's Tina again.
Hello, Tina.
Actually, I have a few theoretical questions regarding the tablet and using the. I think you were answering my question that I sent in through MSN about a blind person being able to do the handwriting tool. Is it cursive or print that you're inputting?
Either one.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I'll handle either one.
Okay. I could do either uppercase or lowercase print letters. I can only sign my name in cursive and that's it. But.
Well, there you go. It sounds like you're all set then.
But
yeah.
My question went even further just now as I was sitting on the phone here thinking. Have you heard about the different products, for instance, like the Talking Tactile Tablet and the, what's the one from that they use up there with the tiger there in Washington?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure I can recall the
name.
I'm
not sure I remember the name. It's just on the tip of my tongue. But yeah.
They're the tablet input devices that you can use for drawing and or enhancing an existing tactile image by labeling, putting tactile labels on the, attaching tactile labels to points on a screen, where you can.
So you want to know if a tablet PC screen could be used for that?
Yeah, I'm trying to kind of get at that. So are there features that are built into a tablet
screen
to, say, for instance, in addition to handwriting, where you could input pictures? like by drawing them with your finger on the screen. And or oh heck, I don't know. I guess.
Yeah, I think we got the question there, Tina. And we'll let you listen on the air, okay?
Okay. And then okay. I want a braille display that'll do high resolution braille graphics.
Well, there you go. Save your pennies. Okay, we'll let you listen on the air.
You know, some of the specialized tablets, when you mentioned Tiger, that would, if it's related to the Tiger tactile embossers and output, that would be a different type of tablet technology and not related to a tablet PC. One of the things that I have worked with students who have visual disabilities is using Microsoft OneNote, which is a free form writing tool. And I do use that with JAWS, even though I can just hear you shudder at free form writing tool.
Yeah, exactly.
I do use it with students who have visual disabilities, and they can trace maps and other things that they need for school into Microsoft OneNote as diagrams. Microsoft OneNote creates both note containers and graphics containers. So for students who are in school, you can take notes, and you can either use a keyboard to input into it, or you can use your handwriting. And then if the instructor draws something on the board, you can add that diagram to your work. If you have to put diagrams from other sources into your work, you can also add those. So I have done some training on students who have visual disabilities. One of the other things about tablets is that here in Ontario, a lot of school boards are going tablet. And so the students are getting tablets. They don't have a choice. They don't get laptops. It is the tablet PC operating system. And whether you use the handwriting or not, that's the operating system that you're going to be working with, and that's the device you're going to be working with. Traditionally, they have been the convertibles. So they look exactly like a laptop computer. It's just that they do have the handwriting component. So for people who are screen reader users, just ignore the handwriting. You'll never even know that it's there, and use the tablet as you usually would. So if you have kids, or if you're in a school district or a university or college that has decided the students are going tablet, just don't be afraid of it, because your adaptive technology will work on it.
Very interesting. I would like to talk a little bit about this concept of OneNote, because it seems really fascinating to me. When I first heard about it, of course, I thought, oh, so it's going to replace, you know, something like the Outlook Notes feature, which I don't know if you've used Notes in Outlook, but it's basically, it's not freeform, but it's...
Hey, Sweetie, are you there? Karen? Are you
there? Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
She's here, Daryl.
Yeah.
Weird. Okay, sorry about that. That was weird.
Yeah, it's okay, Daryl.
It's a Canadian thing.
Yeah. Not a problem. So now this whole issue of, because you mentioned before that you could use OneNote with the keyboard, and honestly, we have it at work. Like I can actually get it and install it and work with it, because it's part of our MSDN Universal subscription.
Right. You need to download my book, Jeff.
Yeah, I'll definitely do that. I'll be in touch. But can you tell us a little bit, because I'm kind of fascinated about the user interface with this, because, you know, do you actually have a traditional caret, as you would in like Word or actually creating an email message, that type of a thing? What is the interface like? Can you kind of describe it to our users?
You do have a caret. And when you start typing, now, because it is a free-form tool, for the people who are using screen readers, you need to press the home key so that you make sure you're against the left margin of the page. If you think of a coil ring notebook and the page is in there, that's the same concept as Microsoft OneNote. I can have folders. And, for example, traditionally, I'm teaching students how to use OneNote who are in school, so they would have a history folder. And in the history folder, they would have a section called maybe American history and a section called Canadian history. Within the American history section, for every week of notes, I can have a separate tab, so I can start each topic as something new and quickly move to that tab using a keyboard command. In terms of entering the information using a keyboard, again, once I enter the title of the page, which might be War of 1812, I press the tab key. And I would then press my home key just to make sure I'm at the margin, and then start taking notes. As long as I continue typing and pressing enter, I'm in one note container. If I wanted to create a different note container, I would simply press my down arrow, press home again. Now, in OneNote 2007, I don't have to do that. It'll automatically go over to the left margin for me, which is really nice. I also beta tested OneNote 2007, and it's a tool that I really believe in terms of it being a collaborative tool for people who are screen reader users. I can also record lectures and annotate, and that's why I talk about making the separate containers, because every time you make a separate note container on a page, you can then annotate an audio recording. So if someone were recording this using Microsoft OneNote and they wanted to mark important points, all they would have to do throughout the presentation would be to create a new note container and sort of a little note to themselves about the topic. When this is finished, as soon as they would move to those individual note containers, they are at that point in the audio file and can review what the instructor or what I had said. So it's a really for people with disabilities, learning disabilities, visual disabilities, people who are screen reader users, it's a really nice tool for being able to both record lectures and annotate at the same time. Now, OneNote 2007 has a couple of other really nice features. Currently, not terribly accessible for people using screen readers. But that's because I haven't found a way to actually find the containers that it creates. Hmm. But if I have a PDF document open, I can actually print that PDF document into a OneNote page and then make that text searchable, which means I can then copy and paste it anywhere I need to. Although I can't read it with my screen reader in its sort of OCR'd container, I can copy and paste it somewhere where I can.
Yeah, to Notepad, the other thing, or Word or something.
Yeah, other thing I can do is to scan a document right into Microsoft OneNote and again make that searchable and take it somewhere and read it. So there are some really nice tools and because academic institutions are starting to see OneNote as a powerful tool for e-learning and organizing classroom notes, because you can have text in it, you can have handwriting in it, you can have handwritten diagrams, web page content, links to web pages, links to documents, images, just everything. For a course, you can keep in this one coil ring binder on your computer. People are finding it a powerful tool. It's also, and I haven't had a chance to test this with 2007 simply because I didn't have contact with anyone else with OneNote 2007, but OneNote 2003 was the only tool that I knew of where students could do group work collaboratively, and if someone were using a screen reader, the person using the screen reader could participate equally and contribute and type information into the session that they were sharing. Then once the session had ended, as long as everybody in the group had agreed to use the keyboard instead of handwriting, the screen reader user would have access to all of the notes that group had made as a group. And I don't know of any other collaborative tool where you can actually share a page in an application and everybody write on it, and then when the session is over, the person using the screen reader still has access to the text.
Hmm.
So is that an online facility, or is that so that's not a whiteboard type thing that text?
No, you're actually working on a page in Microsoft OneNote. You choose to share a session. The leader of the session, whoever that is, gets an IP address that they then send to everybody else. Everybody else plugs that into their OneNote session, and then everybody's looking at the same page. So as soon as something gets typed onto the page, everyone has access to it.
Wow.
Well, this is definitely something I'm going to have to look
investigate.
Into. Yeah, absolutely.
I think you've opened up our proverbial eyes, so to speak.
Yeah, because, you know, again, this is a one of these things where you think of tablet, you know, something not really accessible. You think of OneNote,
yeah,
thing,
icky, yeah.
And you think, no way, that's just not going to work. And I'm still having a little bit of difficulty kind of understanding how one would navigate to ensure that how does this tab correlate to this tab? You know, that type of thing. But that's really kind of beyond the scope of what we're doing here tonight. But inquiring minds want to know.
OneNote is that the second item under the help is keyboard commands.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's really good. And you have all those documented, of course, in your book.
Exactly. Step by step how to create everything and how to use it. From the keyboard.
Yeah, that's great. How much are your books generally?
I sell the Word books are sold in a bundle, and it's the Introduction, Intermediate, and Advanced Word. I cover everything except macros because I just don't really like macros. And those are $60. There's also a Getting Started series, which is the Introduction to Word, Internet Explorer 6, and Outlook 2003, and that's $60. I just completed a From the Keyboard series, so it has some hints about using adaptive technology, but it's primarily how to use the application without using a mouse. And that I also have a Getting Started series, which is Outlook, Introduction to Word, and Internet Explorer.
Okay.
I'm hoping to have a From the Keyboard series on Office 2007 by the end of the year.
Well, that's great, because that's the next thing I'd like to talk about. But before we do that, we have a caller. Let's bring the caller in. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi there. Sorry to monopolize.
That's okay, Tina.
I'm wondering, how robust is that feature to link text to certain pieces of audio? Like, for instance, say you have this, maybe say 2 or 3 second clip that you're interested in annotating. Can you have it so that it would only play that clip and or repeat it, you know, until you tell it to stop? As far as, you know, if you're, well, actually what I was thinking of is in terms of music and memorizing music, you know, at certain points, you know, if you were listening to a recording, say, to annotate certain, you know, things about certain phrases or whatever, does it just mark a single point, or can you mark a beginning and an end point for that
audio segment?
Yeah.
Okay, Tina, we'll let you listen on the air.
Mm-hmm. Well, as soon as you create a new note container, you create a new annotation point, and there are controls within OneNote, so you can play, you can rewind, you can listen to the audio independent of the text. If you wanted to, you could even, because it keeps things in a folder in my documents called Notebook, you can even separate the Windows, I think they're Windows Media audio files, and take them with you, separate from Microsoft OneNote. So you can, every time you create a new container, you create a new annotation point. So if you only wanted to isolate a 2 or 3 second, no, you'd have to be pretty fast, point, then you would simply just use your down arrow and create a new annotation point. And wherever that new annotation point is, that would be the end of what you had annotated previously.
Okay. You know, all the things that we've talked about, we could talk about for an hour.
I know.
it's simply amazing that you really have a wide range of expertise here in a lot of different areas, and we're definitely going to want to have you back at some point to kind of focus in on specific topics. But one of the things I wanted to definitely touch on tonight for the next 10 or so minutes is Office 2007. And I know you had mentioned to me that you and you mentioned here that you beta tested Office 2007. And would you agree that the most significant from an accessibility and usability standpoint, that the most dramatic change in office would be the new ribbon bar?
Yes.
Okay.
It's interesting because I find that keyboard users have less problems with the ribbon than most dependent people.
That's interesting because I tried Office 2007 for a while and got very frustrated with it because it was, you get used to, you know, I mean, especially if you were a very, very quick keyboard user in Office, you were very used to, you know, the application behaving a specific way when you, you know, actually hit a few different keys. and I found it very frustrating when it wouldn't act the way that I expected it to. Do you find that? Because, I mean, obviously you're probably still using Office 2007, right?
Yes, I know. I now have a release version. And
oh,
I
good, because the beta is expiring.
And on my desktop, yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. It took me a couple of days to get used to the ribbon. And the way that I approach things is that as I figure out keyboard commands for something new, I write them down, and I write down sort of the steps and why I do it. And from that come my books, because often if you're reading help documentation, they leave out the three critical points that you need in order to achieve success. So I've just gotten used to, as I go through things and as I learn things, I document it for myself. I also find that if I write it out myself on the in Microsoft Word or WordPad or Notepad, I tend to remember it better. So that's just my way of learning. So it did take me a few days. And again, I started with things that I do on a daily basis. And most of the things I do on a daily basis, I can still use my keyboard commands for. Control-Alt-S, I bring up the Apply Styles pane. Control-S, Control-P, all of those things still work. So I was able to at least be functional while I was learning some of the ribbon commands. But I find that in a lot of cases, I'm using either one less keyboard command or the same amount. It's just that I'm not going through menus anymore. I'm going through the ribbon. And a lot of things that may have been hidden under two or three sub-menus, I find are now right there for me. And I'm actually using less keyboarding to find them.
So you find that true? I mean, that's been stated by a number of people that, you know, that are actually cited. I mean, you listen to, you know, computer talk shows and other people who talk about Office 2007, and they say exactly the same thing. They say, you know, this feature is staring me right in the face, and I didn't even know Word could do that. And you're actually finding that to be true for even someone just, you know, using the keyboard as well and with a screen reader?
Yeah. I mean, I used a lot of the features in Microsoft Word, for example, simply because of the work that I do.
Sure.
And now I don't have to remember what menu they were under because things are grouped nicely and they're right there. So it's less time, even if I have to look for it. I'm taking less time to look for something than I would have with a menu because I start with either the home tab, the insert, references. I mean, having everything for references and review there in their on their own tab instead of trying to remember where things were. I also make use of the cat or the quick access toolbar because there are tools that I use like putting alt text on images. So I put the alt text button up on the cat. So whenever I need to put alt text on an image, on my cat it's alt and the number 5. And how easy is that? I have the dialog box up where I can enter my alt text. I also tend to create anything PowerPoint, although I don't use a lot of PowerPoint, in Word and then send it over to PowerPoint. And I have the button that says send to PowerPoint right there on my cat, alt 6. So tools that I use on a regular basis, I have even faster keyboard commands to move to them.
Absolutely. One of the things that I found very, very frustrating with Outlook, do you use Outlook for your email client?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. I love Outlook 2007.
You do?
I love the to-do bar.
Wow. Okay.
The one thing they did at the to-do bar, I just love.
But
getting your email in a Microsoft Word format rather than a virtual cursor, though?
Yeah, that was my next question, because especially with HTML content, it makes reading that rather interesting.
Well, I'm still at the sort of hybrid stage. Because I was a beta tester and the adaptive technology wasn't working with the betas, because, of course, it can't. It's like trying to make it work with a moving target.
Exactly. Yeah.
I got used to an email message came in, and I would just throw the content in a notepad and read it. And, yeah.
Oh, boy. So you're still doing that.
And I'm still doing that, because I find that the adaptive technology is still developing, and it's still trying to figure out in a lot of ways what to do with some of the components of Office 2007. Having beta tested it, I did my best to call to the attention accessibility issues.
Yeah.
And to try to make sure that everything was at least keyboard navigable. How the adaptive technology people deal with that is
hard to
beyond
say
the
right
scope
now.
Of
yes, exactly.
Of my
exactly.
Being.
Yes, exactly. Well, I mean, not only are people from an accessibility upset about this change, there are plenty of people who were not very happy about the change from a rendering standpoint either. In fact, there were numerous blog posts all over the internet about how people did not like the fact that Microsoft is now using Word. Of course, the real advantage is that you have access to all of Word's features as you're reading an email message, and so you gain all that level of accessibility.
It's not really fully integrated into Word. It's a Word-ish, because you can have Outlook.
Right.
You can have Outlook without Office on your computer, and you will still be using that Word-ish editor.
Right, but it's using the Word object model and all
ish.
Of that.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's very, I don't know. It's one reason, honestly, that I'm sort of, and I'm sure I'll be kicking and screaming my way into Office 2007 eventually, as 2003
as
is phased out.
As we all did from DOS and Windows.
Yes. But I'm going to stay where I'm comfortable, and I think I'm going to stay at Office 2003 for quite a while. But when you get your new series of books done for Office 2007, we'll definitely have to have you back and have you talk to us all about your books and what they have to offer for people to be able to download, because, you know, that might be about the time that people are really, you know, getting more into Office 2007, sort of near the holidays or later on in the year. So, yeah. Wow. You never stop, do you, Karen?
No.
Yeah. That's good, though.
People tell me that.
That's all right. That's good. Are you planning on attending any of the conventions in the summer?
The only convention that or conference that I'm going to is in Madison, Wisconsin, and it's the Distance Teaching and Learning Conference, and I'll be doing a half day PDF accessibility workshop there.
Okay, so you're not going to be attending, for example, the ACB convention or anything like that.
No, I keep missing them. I keep either missing deadlines, or I just keep missing them, and I don't know why.
No problem.
I keep missing the dates and realizing when they are.
Okay.
But
well,
I should be at Accessing Higher Ground too in November.
Okay. Well, we have just about 2 minutes left here, 2 or 3 minutes left, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of review again for everybody's benefit. What's on your website? What do you have to offer up there? And you can give your contact information so that people can get a hold of you.
Okay. Well, my email is Karlen, K-A-R-L-E-N, .communications, with an S, @ Primus. And unlike the website, this is PRIMUS.ca. So Karlen.communications @ Primus.ca. And feel free to ask me questions about anything that we've talked about this evening. On the website, you'll find I have one page devoted to tablet technology. I have another one devoted to IPAC technology, and you'll find links to the Maestro and the PacMate and the Braille Note there. I have a page on alternate textbook production because it's something else that I am interested in, and I do workshops on how to create DAISY books and alternate production for educational material. There are also some free things on the very front page, and they are related to what you should know about your screen reader after 10 hours of training. And those are primarily focused here in Ontario. There is some funding for adaptive technology, and with that funding you are eligible for 10 hours of training on screen readers or screen magnification, 10 hours of training on OCR scanning software. And so what I did to help clients, because I was an ADP assessor, was to create this checklist of what you should know about your screen reader or your screen magnification software. And it includes a bit about Windows, because you can't learn things in isolation after 10 hours of training. And it's for clients, it's for assessors, it's for trainers, so that you have an idea of what kind of content and how much material to provide for people. And I always say that even if you can't absorb that amount of information in 10 hours because you have a learning disability or because, you know, the computer is all of a sudden just being a computer, then at least you should be left with this much material to study on your own. So okay, those things are there for you. Also, information about CCTV assessment and protocols.
Okay.
And what you should expect when you go for an assessment for a video magnifier or CCTV. Because okay, I find a lot of people are afraid. They're afraid that if they answer questions during an assessment the wrong way, that they're not going to get equipment. So I try to sort of de-stress that and give them some information about what the assessor is looking for so that they can help identify what kind of CCTV is going to be best for them. So just all kinds of things.
Yeah, and then, of course, your Word, Outlook, and Office.
Yeah, there's a link. Yeah, there's a link directly to the IRTI catalog site.
Okay.
For the books.
All right. Well, again, Karen, we want to really sincerely thank you for coming on to Main Menu Live this week. And
we should give the website out again as well.
Okay.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, going to give that. We'll also put a link up to that on the On Demand Archives page. Go ahead, Karen.
The website page is http://www.iprimus, and it's spelled I-P-R-I-M-U-S. .ca/tilde/martha/table.htm.
All right. Again, Karen, you want to sincerely thank you for coming on to Main Menu this week. And we'll be back next week with another brand new edition of Main Menu and Main Menu Live. We'll see all of you next week.
If you would like to contact the Main Menu production team or panel of experts heard this evening on Main Menu Live, then simply send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. If you have suggestions for topics or you have questions that you would like to have addressed on a future edition of Main Menu Live, then email us and we'll do what we can to answer them or cover your suggested topics on a future Main Menu Live. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week on ACB Radio Mainstream for another Main Menu Live.